Hi everyone, I'm Matt Arts. Welcome to a mini-series in partnership with the Royal Anthropological Institute of Great Britain and Ireland. This mini-series was created in anticipation of the upcoming Anthropology, AI, and the Future of Human Society virtual conference, which is being held from June 6th through the 10th of this year, 2022. So sit back and enjoy, and let's talk about the future. Hi everyone, welcome back. Matt Arts here with prolific Sarah Pink, Director of the Emerging Technologies Research Lab at Monash University, where she also has a joint appointment across the Faculty of Art, Design and Architecture and the Faculty of Information Technology. Her research focuses on emerging intelligent technologies, automation, data, digital futures, safety, and design for well-being. At the upcoming Anthropology, AI, and Future of Human Society conference, she'll be the keynote speaker, as well as participating in a week-long panel that will be running every day, along with some other colleagues from NASH, including Deborah Lanzeni, who was also on the podcast two episodes ago. So, Sarah, thanks for coming on. I'm sure many people know a little bit about your background, and so I'm not going to have you step through everything, especially given the amount that you've done. But my first question for you would be, could you maybe tell us a little bit about how you went from visual anthropology to futures and maybe along the way, how you got interested in design anthropology?
Hi, Matt. And thanks for that introduction. Well, look, my career has always been one which has looked at the edge of anthropology. I think I've always been really interested in thinking about what could happen next in the discipline, identifying really interesting practices and approaches that are not really in the mainstream, but which I think are super important. So visual anthropology for me was always fascinating. I did my master's degree in visual anthropology at Manchester University, where I learned anthropological documentary filmmaking. But I pursued that not so much as a filmmaker initially, although I have now started to make documentaries again, but by using the visual as a mode of understanding the world and engaging with people in anthropological fieldwork. And for me, that just added something which the mainstream of the discipline didn't have, and it's something I really wanted to take forward. No one was more surprised than me when my book, Doing Visual Ethnography, became so popular. It's now in its fourth edition. The 2021 edition has a very distinct focus on futures and starts to carve out my vision for a futures anthropology, which involves audiovisual practice. It's one of the things that I see it being the core of a futures anthropology. No one could have been more surprised than me that that book was so successful. I wrote it because I thought something exciting and interesting was happening. I could see some really, really promising work emerging. I wanted to pull it together to establish that field of visual ethnography and to push it forward because I thought it was important and interesting, not because I realised that so many people would jump on board. So for me, futures anthropology. And then many of the other steps that I've taken in my career as well, looking at sensory ethnography, the idea of an anthropology of emerging technologies or with emerging technologies, and futures anthropology, it's a very similar motivation. It's when I understand and see that something which sparks my interest, that inspires me, is going on, it provokes questions for me, I begin to investigate it. And it's something that I believe needs to be taken forward and put at the center rather than being at the margins, which many of these areas that I've looked at have been.
Great. And so, we're certainly going to make our way to discuss futures anthropology. But one of the other things that you have often done throughout your career is to collaborate quite a bit, both within the discipline and outside of the discipline. And so, was that always just about pushing the boundaries of anthropology, or was there some other genesis for that?
Well, there was one very simple reason, actually. I got my PhD in 1996. I worked pretty much on my own as a lone researcher and as a single author until the first few years of the 2000s, so around 20 years ago. And I just really quite simply started to collaborate with a couple of people, and I started to realize I did not want to do my research on my own for the rest of my career, which is a typical anthropological career after all. I realized how much I could learn from collaborating with people from different disciplines, and also, of course, from collaborating with stakeholders in similar issues and questions that I wanted to work on from outside academia. So for me, that was really the key motivating factor. I was absolutely stunned by what I learned from collaborating with industry partners and work I did around the home and the work I did around the sensory home. Lots of the things I became interested in that were sparked by the interests and concerns of industry. Also, when I started to collaborate with my colleagues who did work about the construction industry, you know, a life and death workplace, one of the most dangerous places to work in the world. Suddenly started to realize how much I could learn from them, from their research practice, from their research questions, and how it expanded my anthropology considerably. Working in a discipline which very infrequently tackled the questions that people in those areas were looking at. So, absolutely, I think that collaboration has led me to encounter issues which I think are so important to focus on. But it's also opened my practice and my ways of thinking and doing anthropology and enabled me to, I think, be a better scholar.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, the concept of opening up your practice is a really nice way of framing it. And I like that, you know, even on the Monash site, you list that you do consulting work with industry partners, which is something that, you know, that's the world I come from. I have a business tech background and I came in anthropology later. And so I've always viewed this as an opportunity to collaborate and really intervene, which again, we'll kind of get there in the conversation. But one other thing you just say in that space that I've seen in, you know, one of the videos I've watched of you is moving from critique to collaboration. Not to say that, you know, the critical perspective and critiquing is bad, and of course there's a value in that and using it to collaborate and move forward. But also sort of starting to shift the social sciences that way. And so, you know, I'm curious to know, you know, as we sort of start pointing towards the concept of futures anthropology, what is your vision, broader vision here for how you see, you know, the social sciences first, and then maybe we'll get to futures anthropology. But in terms of this collaborative model, you know, and really starting to really cross-pollinate.
Yeah, look, I think there's always going to be an important role for disciplines, for disciplinary critique, for the formulation of and development of ideas and theories within disciplines. I don't think we should ever let that go. But I think for me, really, for the social sciences to survive and to move forward, we need to change. We need a new social science and we need a new anthropology. And I believe we need an expanded anthropology that's capable of playing in the what I would call the future space. Now, that's a space where futurists, economists, designers, engineers, and the consultancies all act. Teaching the future is something quite unproblematic for them to engage with and then for them to try to intervene in. Anthropologists have been, we've been held back by our own discipline, by the theoretical and methodological kind of tenets of the work that we do. And I think that we need to be bold. I think we need to think about radically changing the way that we do anthropology in it, to enable us to work in that space. Now, that doesn't mean abandoning the principle of anthropological ethics. It doesn't mean being imprudent. It doesn't mean being rash, but it means being bold. It means stepping out of our comfort zones and seeking to intervene in a space where the future is continually being predicted, assumptions about the future are currently being made, interventions towards the future are being produced on a daily basis. Those workers and professionals in those disciplines very unproblematically make claims about the future, even when they condition them by saying, well, you know, we have to acknowledge that everything is really uncertain. They often condition them with those statements, but in fact, go ahead to make very powerful statements about how things will be and how things should be in the future. So, as anthropologists, of course, we don't want to fall into that trap, but we need to find a way forward in which we can speak about the future and we can speak about possible futures, we can speak about principles through which to understand futures, and we can guide industry and government and all kinds of other organizations towards actually doing futures in ways that are more ethical, that are more realistic, and that are more plausible. And that I think that we would believe we would put our names to advocating for as anthropologists.
You know, one comment on that, and again, it's a little bit more of a comment than a question, but those who do engage in such activities, you know, in an unproblematic way, they also have a tendency to get a lot of attention, which anthropology doesn't always get. You know, we often are not asked to be the talking head on the news and in other such places. And again, more of a comment, but, and I appreciate we need to do it responsibly, but being in that space also may help the discipline, right?
Yes, being in that space might help the discipline. We need to be prudent in that space, but we do need to make bold statements. We need to create those calls to attention to what we're doing and what we want to say. We need to find the means to do that. Now, whether that's by making bold statements on social media that can draw people into our narratives, into our arguments, whether that's through documentary film practice, whether it's through writing incisive reports to industry and to government. We do all of those things in the Emerging Technologies Lab. That's part of our practice. And I think it's very important to work not only on doing good anthropology in the future space and publishing it in academic journals, but of course to find the right ways to communicate our message.
Yeah, to all audiences. And so you've also said in the Anthropologies and Futures book that we have a moral obligation to implicate ourselves in futures. And so can you speak to, you know, what was the fire within you that, you know, generated this moral obligation? What are you seeing out there? And, you know, maybe some of that is obvious, but what really calls you to say that now is the time that we need to get involved?
Right now, I think we're facing a moment which is so often spoken about as crisis. So we're still in a global pandemic. In Australia, we have the bushfire crisis, the climate crisis, which is catastrophic. We also have in Australia, for example, asthma thunderstorms. The degradation of our environment and climate change has, and of course, the pandemic is all part of climate change as well. We're in this moment of crisis, and I think invoking this moment of crisis has become very common. I invoke it as well. It's a kind of wake-up call. But I think the crucial question for me is, what kind of wake-up call is it really? Some people say that, you know, the future is becoming more challenging, right? But is it really? I think what this wake-up call for me actually is, it's a wake-up call to the state of uncertainty that we're already always in. It actually shows us uncertainty. It shows us the uncertainty that we don't usually see. We were in an equal state of uncertainty, right, before the COVID-19 pandemic came into view. But when it actually came into view, it showed us uncertainty. It enabled us to feel what uncertainty was like. So we have this wake-up call. We know that we need to actually address the uncertainty that we're moving into. But do we just address that by critiquing the situation we're in, by kind of critiquing the techno-utopian visions, the solutions for our future, or by arguing that we're on a dystopian spiral? I think there's another way. I think the really important way ahead that we need to look at is the question of, how do we create optimistic futures from the position of uncertainty that we're in? What do we look to? How can we seek out those examples of how people have moved forward into the future with emerging technologies in ways that have been beneficial, in ways that have worked out, in ways that save lives? In ways that make people more comfortable, in ways that make people safer, in ways that improve health. What's really happening in the world? How do we seek out those examples of what goes right, what works well? How do we generate new modes of optimism that are realistic and that are plausible? For me, that's a key driving force. And I'll speak about some of those that I've witnessed in my keynotes, and I write about them as well. Because those big top-down solutions, which are the ones that futurists and consultancies and economists and engineers speak about and they make claims about, those big solutions to our futures are the ones that are funded by industry, by research councils. How do we actually start looking towards the other modes of going forward into possible realistic and plausible futures? How do we encounter that every day is a site for generating futures? And whose responsibility is it to do that? That's where I would put anthropology. That's one of our roles as anthropologists, because we really do get there in everyday life with people. We move forward with people as they go over kind of from the cusp, as they sit at the cusp of the future. And my new book, I have to give a plug for my new book, which is coming out later this year. But my new book has a title with a slash in the middle, not a colon, not a hyphen. It's called Emerging Technologies. But I didn't want to just call my new book Emerging Technologies, because my new book is about life at the edge of the future. So it's Emerging Technologies / Life at the Edge of the Future. And that's really where I think we need to focus. We need to focus on that moment where we slip over the edge of the present into the future, that moment of inevitability, and to consider how we conduct ourselves at that moment, how we practice as anthropologists at that moment of going forward, but also how we can engage with a world that's at that moment of going forward, how technologies actually go forward at that moment. So think of technologies as not pivoted as being at the edge of the future that they will then be launched into, which they will provide solutions for, but actually thinking of technologies that are moving forward into the future with us, that emerge with us in everyday life to actually create futures that might be realistic and plausible and hopefully optimistic. So that's where I think we need to look. And that's why I think anthropology is the discipline that's actually capable of working in that space and understanding that moment where we go forward. And it's also what I would want to call an anthropology forward, anthropology that goes forward with the world and that seeks to comment on it and intervene as we go forward, rather than anthropology that always writes about what has happened in the past and situates everything we say, which I know that we do in respect for research participants and respect for the fact that we don't want to crystallize cultures and objectify them in a continuous present. But I think it requires us to really rethink the temporality of anthropology, to respect all of the ethics that informed that very important view, but to really consider what the ethics of doing anthropology forward are. What are the ethics of doing research in a possible future space where we're actually dealing with knowledge about things that are unknowable? So that's a kind of, I think, a really exciting conundrum, something we need to address and that we can address as anthropologists.
Yeah, no, sounds great. And so, you know, obviously there's a lot to unpack in there. There's a few things that certainly jump out at me. One is anticipation and sort of this constantly moving frontier of emergence that we need to contend with. But maybe to start, I think the big one that jumps out, which is worth talking about because it almost builds on where you ended, is the idea of intervening. So just like, you know, documenting and writing in a certain temporality that sort of refers to the past is a hallmark of the discipline, you know, intervening is something that is, you know, many, I think, would challenge us on of, you know, who, you know, who's intervening for whom and who decides, you know, what the intervention is. Right. And how is, you know, what are the ethics of that? And so for anybody out there who might still be contending with that, what do you say to that?
I think there are going to have to be various different modes of intervening as we go forward. And some of those involve the question of how do we engage with organizations, their policies, their interests. So one mode of intervention, which is something also that I will talk about in the keynote, is how we might intervene with an organization that we partner with, how we might engage anthropological ways of knowing to demonstrate to them that certain assumptions about the future are deeply problematic and others are much more viable and plausible. So that's one layer of thinking about how we might try to shift understandings of futures and what they could possibly be like, and shift those dominant mainstream understandings, which might be considered to be on one level harmful understandings, but also if they're understandings that really will not bring about any realistic or plausible change, they're also problematic for those organisations. So how do we actually shift thinking about futures in such a way that the modes of working towards futures that we believe are more ethical can come about in the work of the state, of kind of powerful stakeholders in our futures? So that's one side of it. The other way to thinking about moving towards futures and intervening in futures is to think about that as an incremental practice and process. And here I'm thinking about actually what one of my colleagues, Melissa Duque, calls everyday design, and her everyday design practice as a design anthropologist, where she will actually work with people in the present towards making small interventions collaboratively with them, towards actually shifting the way things are done as we move forward, which is a process, obviously, of mutual learning as well. So those are just two small examples. I think my own work is oriented much more towards engaging with organisations who have started to have concerns about how they're moving forward, what their ethical mode of moving forward might be, what the more realistic or plausible mode of moving forward might be, in terms of their engagements with people and everyday futures. So I think that intervention in that sense is not intervention as a violent act of creating an abrupt change or trying to change what people do, or, you know, what is called behavior change in more psychological terms. It's not that way of thinking about intervention. It's really about thinking about intervening as a much more iterative process of engagement and communication over time. And that's why in Emerging Technologies Lab, we talked a bit about consultancy, what you mentioned, you know, right at the beginning. I would also view consultancy as very much of that process of kind of gentle intervention, rather than simply providing an organisation with an output that then they can use as separate from the way that I've engaged with it. Much of our work is really based in partnership. So we wouldn't want to just deliver something and then say goodbye. It's really about creating partnerships with organisations so that we can work together with them towards futures. And I think, well, you know, what's the difference between the kind of work I do and the kind of work that a consultancy or an agency might do? What I think we bring to it that's so important, and why anthropology is so important in this as well, is that we do go back into our academic disciplines. We're not all anthropologists in my lab. You know, it might be sociology, or it might be media and communication studies, or the anthropology of media, which we go into. But very often when we work on the concepts that we would then present to organisations as ways of rethinking their approaches, we very often do our in-depth ethnographic research and work with participants, and also in terms of thinking about speculative futures or possible futures, or how you might sense or feel a future, what a future might feel like sensorially or emotionally, often in ways that are very difficult to articulate verbally, which is why we use semi-creative practice methods. But so how might we actually bring those feelings about futures into organisations in new ways and enable new thinking around that? So I think that it's very important to think about partnering. And, you know, we encounter so many very ethical organisations who are puzzled by the question of how to engage with futures as they might be sensed and experienced by real people in actual everyday environments. So there's a massive space there to fill. And often those spaces have been filled by assumptions. And sometimes it's very interesting to think about how some of those assumptions have come about. I've done some really interesting work actually trying to trace where the notion of range anxiety came from in relation to electric cars. Because as far as my research says, people do not experience anxiety about the range, the distance that an electric car can travel. In fact, that whole concept has emerged from the history of ideas in engineering and science about electric cars and their battery capacity. But it has become so embedded that we see researchers in human-computer interaction disciplines doing research about range anxiety. And if you look for range anxiety, of course, you're going to find it. But is it really there? Is it really a human emotion and feeling? So anthropology plays that super important role of really, you know, engaging and bringing forward those experiences and making those connections between stakeholders and real everyday ethnographic futures and future imaginaries, possible future experiences. I think one of the reasons why those other disciplines, futurists and economists, have so much success as well is that they already have ways of bringing their arguments into those future spaces with industry and with government. They slot in very easily. But the diverse experiences of many people are very difficult to, and diverse future imaginaries of many different people are very different to bring into a stakeholder space. And that's also why we work with ethnographic video and documentary so much as well, because it offers us a way to actually bringing some of those really close examples and bring people's experiences right close up to stakeholders to actually invite them to gain some kind of empathetic way of connecting with an everyday world. So for me, that, you know, being able to bring the everyday close up into those situations and to invite stakeholders to consider those kind of realistic and plausible visions and versions of the everyday and possible everyday futures is really, really crucial.
So building on that, you know, when talking about the experiential, when talking about, say, uncertainty and, you know, the need in many ways to respond and adapt and be iterative quite quickly today, you know, oftentimes we are starting to kind of push the discipline into some pretty experimental space. And of course, you know, you work in with, you know, many stakeholders across many disciplines, and, you know, certainly from when you read your work, or you can tell that you're borrowing a lot. And so in terms of, you know, the need to be experimental, tell us a little bit about the panel, you know, at the conference and how that's going to maybe try and forge a new path in some experimental ways.
Yes, yeah, so the panel was we're so excited to see how many people apply to our panel. I think we have the biggest panel in the conference, and it's stretched over 5 days. We're all in Australia, all four of us, myself, Deborah Lanzani, Kerry Dahlgren, and Emma Quilty. So we're going to be up till from I think it's 9 till 11 every night with the participants in our panel. And so we're super excited about bringing that kind of international perspective on futures and thinking through that in relation to the kind of work our lab does, but also, yeah, bringing that question of interdisciplinarity and the interventional and new modes of thinking and researching futures to the fore. Why I'm really excited about that space is that it does give us, you know, that real opportunity to foreground some of the things that we've been doing in that space and engage with others as well. So in terms of our own work, one of the really exciting things that I think around interdisciplinarity has been the collaborations that I have developed with designers. I mean, my work with the designer Yoko Akama, who I worked with at RMIT University before I moved to Monash, we developed a design ethnography futures series of work that we did together, which was focused specifically on uncertainty and on modes of generating uncertainty. And I think that that's very important in that space. The papers that we're going to be presenting in the panel, some of those come from our emerging tech lab projects. Emma Quilty is going to be talking about someone who she calls Podman, And I won't give any spoilers, but it is a very kind of exciting and innovative move in terms of the way that, you know, we do anthropology, to actually start thinking and researching and presenting the work in the ways in which Emma is. So that's going to be super interesting. We're also going to be talking about some of the work from our Digital Energy Futures project, which both Carrie Dalgren and I work on. Digital Energy Futures is something I'm going to talk about quite a bit in the keynote as well. It's a project that we've produced several industry reports from. We've produced a documentary film from, and I'm going to be also showing a clip from that film in the keynote too. And also I'm just starting to work on the second documentary from that project, which is going to be about the air and the future of air tech. I think what this kind of approach does is it just gives us the possibility to jump into some really exciting fields. So I'm going to be talking in that one in the panel myself as well about the Digital Energy Futures project, some of the work we've been doing around air tech and electric vehicles. And I'm also really looking forward to hearing about what the other people are going to be speaking and the panel are going to talk about, because I think that the panel for me is a super exciting opportunity to actually draw together some of the new work that I sense is happening around the world. And I know that it is. I know people are starting to think and talk about futures differently. I think that our futures book that I edited with Juan Salazar, Andrew Irving and Johannes Schoberg, I mean, that book was published in 2017. And I'm really excited to see what people actually do with some of the ideas that we've presented in that book. One of the things that was super important in that book is actually the Future Anthropologies Manifesto, which is a 10-point manifesto created at our very first meeting at the Future Anthropologies Network. And it came from a meeting in the pub of 30 anthropologists. We got into groups, we created 10 points for our manifesto, and a group of four from the group went off and turned that into our 10-point manifesto. And that's where we want people to get radical. We want people to get their hands dirty. We want them to really go beyond what anthropology traditionally has been. I think the prospect of the conference for me was also just perfect, because that's exactly the space that we have been developing in Emerging Technologies Lab that I've been arguing for and pushing forward for the last 3.5 years at Monash, but subsequently when I was at RMIT University and I was also director of the Digital Ethnography Research Centre there at St. Gender, that started when I was there as well. So being able to explore that space on a much bigger scale with, I think we have at least around 25 anthropologists are going to be speaking in our panel. I'm actually particularly excited about that panel as well, because it's at an anthropology conference and we're going to have 25 anthropologists discussing that question around an interventional, interdisciplinary, maybe creative practice-based futures anthropology, which focuses on AI, automation and emerging technologies. And I was also so pleased that there were so many people now working in that field. I think it's something that we need to take forward as well. It's not just that there's an opportunity, because there is a strong focus amongst funding agencies and such an imperative to kind of work in this field around technology. It's something that we need to address as anthropologists. It's something that we need to address in our discipline, but also as a panel emphasise in an interdisciplinary and multi-stakeholder, an interventional way. But it's something that won't go away as well, which is also why I think that some of the kind of dystopian narratives are also perhaps going down the wrong track. I mean, I think they're right, obviously, to highlight the inequalities and the terrible problems that are associated with automation. But those problems are not due to automation. Those problems are due to, you know, global capitalism and the inequalities of the systems that we in societies that we already live in. We need to sort those societal problems out, not blame automation. But automation is not going to go away. it's become embedded in the way that our futures are emerging. It's become embedded in everyday lives in so many ways that we don't notice. I appreciate the argument that we need less automation rather than more. I appreciate the argument that we shouldn't just automate because we can. Of course we shouldn't. But I think that we need to engage full on, you know, with automation and AI and emerging technologies and what's happening with that space. If any of these questions around, you know, we shouldn't be automating when we don't need to, when should we automate, when does that really work, how do we move forward with our human futures, and what role should automation and AI and emerging technologies play in that, we need to be fully engaged in that space. As anthropologists, but also as anthropologists in this wider interdisciplinary world, and I really hope that our panel is going to bring forward some really inspiring insights into how people are already doing that, but also I hope that it will enable us collectively as a group of 25 anthropologists to think about what the next steps could be. What are the possible futures of anthropology with automation, with emerging technologies, with AI, not just the anthropology of. I'll talk about this much more in my keynote, but we need to get beyond doing the anthropology of futures, the anthropology of anticipation, the anthropology of technology. Of course, we need to do that, but that's not what I want to do. I want us to actually take that next step, and I certainly don't want to take it alone. I don't think I'm taking it alone. I know I have a wonderful group of people around me in my lab and colleagues internationally who are also taking that step with me, and with whom I would never been able to take the steps I have, because, like, as we've discussed, so much of my work is collaborative, which means that I'm never the sole owner of, I'm responsible for my all of my bad ideas, of course, but I'm never the sole owner of any of this work. But I'm very excited at the prospect of a whole community of anthropologists forming and taking this forward together.
Yeah, and I'm sure many listeners are excited for that vision of the future of anthropology. So thanks for sharing that. And the panel sounds great. Now, the lab, yourself and the lab, are up to so much. I know you've already, you know, name dropped one of the new books, but you have new articles, you know, it's new book, multiple new books, multiple new articles. Any others you'd like to just share with anybody who's listening?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So first, I'd like to give a massive plug to our new book, which is called Design Ethnography. If anybody's seen it on social media, it's the one with the white unicorn in a white cloud and a black background on the front. And the unicorn, for me, was just like the perfect choice for this book. The unicorn means so many different things in different cultures and stands for so much that it seemed to me to be a really powerful symbol of a design ethnographic approach, which has at its core so many principles around ethics and diversity, getting into the everyday, moving forward, and establishing a new vision for ethnographic practice and design ethnographic practice. It really puts forward so many of the values that inform our work. And it also, what's super important about it, it's a book written by a team of women. And each of the women who has co-authored the book with me is one of the people who I've worked with over a decade to develop this design, this idea of design ethnography. And I've the author order is actually represents the length of time and through which I've been developing these ideas with each of the different participants and authors of the book. So it's really a collective book. It's about a vision that we've developed together for design ethnographic practice, which is rooted in anthropological principles in many ways, but it's also an interdisciplinary book in that it's written by myself as an anthropologist, design anthropologist and filmmaker, by Vicky Forge, whose background is in pedagogy and design ethnography, Deborah Lanzani, who's again an anthropologist, Melissa Duque, who's a designer who works in design anthropology and has developed amazing everyday design research, Shanti Sumatoyo, who is a human geographer, and Yolanda Strangers, who's a digital sociologist. So it's interdisciplinary in terms of its social science contributions. So Design Ethnography will be out within the next month or two. Very, very excited about that. And I can't wait to hear how people read it and engage with it and to get feedback from it. So that's one book. Another book is Everyday Automation, which is already published. It's an open access book. It was co-edited, again, by a team, interdisciplinary social science team, myself, Martin Berg, who's a sociologist based in Sweden, Deborah Lupton, sociologist based in Australia, and Mira Reckenstein, who's another anthropologist based in Finland. So it was a Scandinavian-Australian collaboration for us. And also many of the contributors are from Australia and Scandinavia, but also from all over the world. And Everyday Automation is subtitled Experiencing and Anticipating Emerging Technologies. It's a collection of, I think, 14 chapters, and really takes us into the way that automation is lived and experienced in the everyday. You know, that book, I think, is, for me, it's a really important, we call it an intervention in how we might go forward thinking about automation in everyday life. But there are other books as well. Another book which I'm really excited about is the Energy Futures book, which is also in press at the moment. Energy Futures is co-edited with Simone Abram, Natalie Orta, and Karen Waltorp. And it was a collaboration between the Future Anthropologists Network and the Energy Anthropology Network of the European Association of Social Anthropologists. In terms of authorship, it's actually, it's a co-edited book, I guess, in the way that it's presented. But for me, it's actually a multi-authored book with over 20 authors. It's based on a workshop that we had in Lyon in France a few years ago. Due to the pandemic, it's taken a very long time for this book to come together. But I'm so excited about the results, because we've co-authored four chapters. Each chapter is co-authored with between three and five or six authors, making it a massive multi-authored book. For me, it's an amazing format through which to drive forward new ideas, and I hope to engage many readers and students in the question of energy futures across four different fields. Finally, An Anthropology of Futures and Technologies is co-edited with Deborah Lanzeni, Karen Waltorp, and Rachel Charlotte Smith. And that book, we're just putting the finishing touches to it right now. And it will also be out soon. And another exciting book that's making some key interventions around how we think about anthropologies and futures. And it has a fantastic set of contributions. Again, a book that's been in the making for a long time during the pandemic. So I'm so excited that I have so many books coming out this year. But I think had the pandemic not happened, I would probably have been having one book out this year, and the others would have been published in the preceding years. So I think this is a wonderful, liberating moment for many of us as well, in terms of letting these ideas that we've had brewing through those years of the pandemic out into the world. But with them, I guess, everything that we publish and say from now on is also informed by our collective experience of the pandemic, as we think and as we write and as we read. So I think a final thought is that the uncertainty that it has made so blatantly obvious to us is, as I've emphasized already, just such an important thing to keep in mind as we develop our scholarship, and to really ask all of ourselves, to ask, you know, ask ourselves, you know, when we're thinking about futures, how do we understand its sister, the sister concepts of uncertainty, and and what new concepts do we need to engage as we move forward? And I think with a couple of spoilers from my Emerging Technologies Life at the Edge of the Futures book, I think the concepts of trust and hope are absolutely essential as we move forward, and that those are two of the key things that we really need to be focusing on.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for wrapping it up like that. Look forward to all the books. I have one on pre-order. Be looking at the others. I'm sure many people will as well. So, Sarah Pink, thanks for coming on. It was a great pleasure.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks all for listening. For more information on the Anthropology, AI, and the Future of Human Society virtual conference, visit the Royal Anthropological Institute's website. I'm Matt Arts, and I hope to see you virtually at the conference.